Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads. This is season 6, episode 11. As usual, I'm joined by Shane and... No.
You're joined by yourself.
I was going to start again and edit that out, but now I won't. I'm joined by Mike and Connor. Say hello.
Hiya.
Hello.
Hi.
We also have two special guests on this episode. We are joined by Zlatan and Alex Lee. From Shells.com. Alex is the CEO of Shells.com and Zlatan is the VP of technology. How are you guys?
Hey, Shane.
Doing good. Yeah, thanks for having us.
No worries, no worries. Yeah, I know it's always that first, like, hey, how are you? It's awkward, but... but
So lie down on the couch and tell me all your problems.
So before we go any further, if you want to get in touch with us, just go to linuxlads.com/contact. You can find all our contact details there. You can also email us on show@linuxlads.com, and you can also get a t-shirt or a mug or something from linuxlads.com/store. So Alex, I'll go to you first. Can you just tell us in a nutshell what shells.com is for somebody who hasn't a clue?
Yeah, absolutely. So now, Shells, we're a service that offers a virtual cloud desktop, basically can be accessed from any web-enabled device. So, you know, sometimes the easy way I explain it to kind of like the amateur, the beginner is like, hey, do you want to use Windows on a MacBook? Well, you can, right? And you can do that through a browser. And that's one thing that we've really tried to simplify that process. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I would... kind of explain it.
So a remote virtual machine, basically.
Yes.
I've seen interesting use cases of people doing it on a tablet, like an iPad or things like that. I mean, in your specific example, they could do virtualization locally on the device or dual booting or something like that, but accessing a cloud remote computer from a mobile device, such as a tablet or a mobile phone, is certainly a very interesting use case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the access, it has a lot of benefits. You're not using your own power of the device. You know, it depends if you're having a box inside the box, you know, it's going to slow down the layers upon layers. The dual booting is also, you know, going to slash your storage and your power again. And the third one is, like, even people dual boot things, they often, you know, don't go into the other OS that much, or even if they go, they avoid updates, something that's, you know, solved by default with Shells. So it's just 5 minutes, go to Shells and you have everything what you need on, you know, on your fingertip, basically, without, you don't need to even have any client software, even though we do provide our own app.
So you have mentioned that you are using or that you are providing virtual boxes through the browser, and you've mentioned Windows there, I think. What else do you have?
Yeah. So we actually offer over 20 different operating systems, and the primary operating systems we offer multiple Linux distros, right? We offer Linux Mint, MX Linux, Ubuntu, OpenSUSE. You know, there's Debian out there, there's Manjaro. So those are just to name a few of them. But yeah, we offer over 20 of them, and we're continuing to add more and more as we go on. So
a notoriously sticky subject, but you'd imagine that a certain amount of people would demand it, but is there any possibility of offering macOS?
Yeah, it's funny you actually say that, because I literally before this discussion, me, Zlatan, and the CTO were talking about macOS and what it would take to get that done. So we actually purchased a Mac Mini the other day, and he's going to actually drive it over to the data center tomorrow and hook it up, literally, and we're going to do some testing.
I just imagine that you have like a data center with racks of, you know, server racks with all of that technology there, and in the middle there's like one lonely Mac Mini sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite an interesting from a technological point of view, because obviously macOS currently runs on x86, but it seems to be that their future is ARM. So I don't know what your server backend is. Presumably it's x86 based, but even if, I mean, there are ARM servers, but there's no guarantees that the Mac operating system would work or would run on that. And there's macOS, from my experience, which is very limited, I'm not a macOS user. macOS virtualization is a bit tricky as well. So it's an interesting thing of how you're going to run it in order to be able to offer it to users.
We did discuss this. I mean, it's a known issue, but so virtualization part is a QEMU, and we can already run ARM-based images. We actually do support inside shells already ARM. We can add any other CPU, of course. But yeah, speaking of Mac, particularly its support inside that virtualization. And we are aware that we would need to add it, but we do have capable team of adding that to the upstream code and supporting the Mac.
There is probably something that you are kind of getting these days, but you, I'm guessing, wouldn't be able to get that from Apple. And that's help with the implementation or help with the distributions. I assume that they help you add their distributions. How does that work? Do you go to Manjaro or do you go to MX Linux and say, this is what we do, we'd like you to be on it, or did they come to you?
It depends. I mean, Alex can elaborate, but it's basically different from every distro.
Yeah, it's very, but a lot of them, I mean, we reached out to them and, you know, we told them about the idea and you know, really the reason why we're reaching out to everyone is because, again, we want to have as seamless of an experience, a virtual desktop experience as possible. So, you know, the logical thing is why not go to the experts of the distros to help and make sure that that happens. So, you know, we've been very fortunate that a lot of the distros have responded to us. I mean, we right now, you know, we've announced some of the partnerships, right, with MX Linux, Manjaro, Linux Mint, KDE, and OpenSUSE. But beyond those ones, we're also actively speaking with other Linux distros right now. You know, one coming up is like Kali Linux. We've been speaking with other ones like Endless OS, GNOME, Zorin, Nitrix, Ubuntu Mate, you know, even Canonical. We just started some discussions with them as well too. So definitely working with them is the most ideal, you know, situation, and that's what we're trying to do. So
the aim really is to deliver any OS somebody could possibly want, really, is it?
Not only any OS that's available there, but we also already implemented the option to build your own custom OS. So if you know how to script things and build images, you can do it. And we have, this was byproduct of the work. It wasn't a plan, to be honest. But what happened, we created something that would be very interesting to distro hoppers or people who just started with Linux, because I remember when I started, I always wanted to build my own distro, and I didn't know in the beginning. And the tools were quite confusing. And in shells, what you have options, if you run any OS that we already support, let's say Debian, and then you change background, change configuration, change, you know, some settings, you can actually export that OS into entirely new image that you can share with your friends. It gets its own ID and it keeps all the changes that you have done.
So Linux from scratch, you heard it here for your folks.
Going back to the distributions, just what? So you get their cooperation. Do you kind of reimburse them as well, or do you provide them with any assistance? Is there any kind of a business or help relationship?
Yeah. So I mean, it varies from distro to distro. You know, some of them, it's like there's affiliate relationships. So, right, if people are coming through their site and signing up, then we're sharing in the commission. So there's that aspect of it. Some other examples, you know, we might stick to more of just like a donation or something like that to get their help as well too. So, and in other instances, like, you know, we just try to help where we can. So a good example would be like, KDE, where they have a beta day. And during those beta days, you know, like the last one, we offered them, I think it was 10 or 20 shells. We added the beta version to two shells, and then, you know, we gave those out to all the different users so they could actually test the beta version without having to put it on their machine. So that was a nice use case.
What kind of reception do you get from the distributions? Are they happy, or is it like a mixed bag again as everything else?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the ones that we're working with are obviously really excited and happy for sure, you know. So, and then some of the other ones that I've spoken with, you know, maybe I just don't get a response or, you know, stuff like that. But I would tell you the majority of folks that we've interacted with up to this point really like the idea, just because, you know, it gives a really another way to get Linux out there, right? To get their distros out there. And it's a way to do it without the obstacle of, again, right, having to wipe out your hard drive or something like that, especially for like a Linux newbie, right? It's just a great option to really test out a distro. So.
And there's also different types of collaboration on our side. So, for example, OpenSUSE already built inside their own infrastructure the build process for shells images. So all the scripts are open source on GitHub, and there is the OpenSUSE script there as well. But they now hooked up the entire script and uploading via their own infrastructure to our platform. As Alex said, we didn't have any negative feedback. They were all positive feedbacks that we had. Maybe somebody didn't respond right away. Something like that. For example, MX Linux, they were kind of slow in response. So we moved forward and just asked them like for a couple of things that they do in their build process. They're probably busy. And then we ended up actually building it on our side. And once they tested it, they were very, very happy with it. And they're now even promoting on their own homepage. If you go to their homepage, they are already promoting shells there. And there's, for example, we don't still offer Endless, but you know, there's that collaborative nature. They asked us if we could do like a demo trial version of shells that would be hosted on their website, which is an idea that, you know, we already set it up to be working on. We didn't still implement it, but it's something that we didn't at that time on our own, you know, came to it. So it's a good feedback from that. Elementary, for example, is interested to be on the platform, but it's paid distro. So they were waiting until we added the payment option to pay for the distribution. We added that with Windows. So, you know, it's moving target, and we are moving kind of, you know, with the community feedback, you know.
Because I think you are, what, about a year old as a company? So you are kind of still figuring out your way around this?
I mean, actually, not even a year. We didn't start really until, we didn't start marketing the product until January, February this year, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So very, very, very new.
Yeah, yeah. It's very new. So, but again, I mean, the interest has been amazing. So obviously that's good for us. And, you know, it's just been a great experience for us. It's been just working with the community and like we've been talking about the distros and how they've been willing to help out has just been amazing. So,
there's a couple of questions here that, would lead well to being joined together, the kind of related. Are there any recommended web browsers? Do you target Chromium or are you, because I imagine there's a lot of Firefox aficionados out there wondering, would it run well in Firefox? And also, would you have any minimum requirements for the computer host computer targeting the web page, so if there's a slightly older computer, maybe it wouldn't be the best experience or something.
Zlatan, you want to chime in?
Basically, to run shells, you need to have a decent connection. because it's obviously streaming entire desktop to you. But other than that, just more recent modern browser. You know, it needs support, you know, HTML5, JavaScript, and speaking of Firefox, I actually run them both on Chrome, Chromium, Firefox, so it works very well. I have Brave on my phone, and it runs inside of Brave on my Android phone. Speaking of old devices, that's one of the targets that we're trying to resolve and hit with that. It's many people don't have disposable income to buy, you know, newer or stronger hardware, but they maybe have like a phone or old computer, or they can buy, you know, like $100 computer, and with if it can run decently a browser, then they can access a very powerful shell and run, you know, Windows, Ubuntu, whatever they need inside that. So basically a very low-end computer, Pinebook, for example, can achieve that, can become a very strong computer running a full-fledged OS.
A Raspberry Pi probably is a good example.
So people already asked us about Raspberry Pi, and while we didn't test on it, we said it should work if it browser works decently. Basically, if YouTube plays for you decently, Shells is going to work. And that same user actually came back like after 1 hour or something. They said, like, I tested on Raspberry Pi and works fine.
But when me coming from IT kind of enterprise support mindset, of obviously I was just in work, so treating it a Raspberry Pi almost like a thin client, where you're connecting into a more powerful desktop in the cloud, even though you're only running it on something not as powerful.
True. So yeah, it can literally run on everything that has a browser. Modern TVs that have browsers with HTML5 capability, you can run on it. You can run it in car, Tesla, you can run it on Xbox, you can run it on the phone.
Did you mean the original Pinebook or the Pro version? Or which one if you tested it?
The original one should be good enough, because as far as I know, it can run YouTube videos in full HD. So anything that can run, you know, YouTube videos full HD without cracking, it's pretty much going to run Shells and decent connection again.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, I even went to a pawn shop and bought 4 computers for $50, and I brought them back, and unfortunately 3 of them wouldn't turn on, but the 4th one worked.
Obviously you can get computers from very low, or if you're going to get very weak computers, you need decent connection, obviously that's expected. You need to, and we might get back to this, but you need at least $5 a month to be able to pay for the service. Who is this kind of aimed at? Who's the core customer, or core, like if you have more than one group?
So, I mean, there's no doubt where we started, which is just why we've collaborated so closely with the Linux folks and so on, is really kind of the tech savvy developers. You know, really to give a solution for being able to test and deploy all from one device, right? So that's definitely the initial target. You know, as we've grown, you know, inevitably different folks have come out and contacted us, and, you know, there's schools who have kind of come into the picture. Schools have found interest because, you know, you now have a lot of schools who are giving computers to their students, but a lot of these schools are donating computers, right? Donating computers that, you know, we're actually doing a school pilot right now with a high school. And I went to the high school, and a classroom of 20 people, we walk in and there's 5 different models of computers, right? Some people have Chromebooks, some people have HPs. Even one kid just had a tablet. So, you know, we went in there and we gave them all Shells, actually, right? Just to level the playing ground, to level and make sure everyone's in the same environment. So, you know, this is a really nice use case as well for Shells too.
What are your kind of personal motivations to, like, what are you doing this for?
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, like, the idea of the virtual desktop has been kind of like in our mind for a long time. And, You know, at the end of the day, we really believe in the whole idea of like trying to close the digital divide. And we see that with this, with Shells being able to provide, you know, a high performance computer, regardless of what type of hardware you might have. So, you know, whether it's students, workers, you know, even small businesses, right? You have small businesses who maybe they don't have the money to get an expert IT infrastructure guy in-house. So, hey, this is a great way to create a virtual network, you know, for a reasonable price. So, you know, that's kind of where we were really focused on.
On my side, I have like always two ways that I approach any product that I work on. And it's one is the altruistic one and another is the technical one. So there's obviously we have the chip shortage now and electronic waste is becoming a big issue globally. With Shells, what we are doing, we're basically giving that life to the devices that they don't need to be replaced, that they can be still used. We're trying to reduce the e-waste that way. There's also, as Alex said, there's the digital divide. Third world countries or even, you know, even developed countries, but rural areas, they don't have, people usually don't have that huge disposable income again, you know, but the internet is coming everywhere, you know, everybody is getting better and better connection, you know, like even the third world countries are getting a quite good connection cheaply. So that way, you know, we're ensuring that people can actually, you know, use any OS, any system, any device, any software, any app on their own devices, no matter where they are, you know, once the internet hits their area. And there's, I myself am Debian developer, and for me, it's very important to have ability to test and debug things on different architectures or different systems. If you're developing an app, I like to say we kind of achieved convergence in another way. So all the systems that we have supported and that are coming to be supported, you basically need to develop it for one system. And we are Shells, it can run on any system that we support. So we have, it's currently not, it's hidden, so it's not public, but we also have Android in the works. So you can develop Android app and run it basically natively on your Windows, because it's going to run through browser or through client. You don't care anymore after that how it's going to be run. It's going to run and it's going to be pretty smooth experience. And then the debugging part, we have very, you know, like I don't have the willing to power up every time and install new system on ARM devices. You know, I just want to debug something on ARM very fast and be done with it. And Shells, you know, gives you that opportunity to bring up ARM device or ARM image that you build, and then you just can bring it up in, you know, less than half a minute every time that you need to debug something, instead of, you know, bringing up the hardware, buying the hardware, installing the system, installing the software, and then debugging what's going wrong.
Just as you were speaking there, where you said it's reliant on an internet connection, but anybody should be able to connect to it. Or like, you guys should collaborate with Starlink. We're going to be in rural Africa. We're going to be in Siberia. We're going to be in...
There's actually a Google project that is going to try to bring more, you know, better connection to Africa. So it's once they achieve that, you know, it's basically a new field and we can elevate, you know, schools and governments and communities in Africa can be elevated right away. So this is really the strong part of Shells. You don't have, you know, a setup time. You don't need to have experts. You don't need to spend, you know, a month on that. And you don't need to spend, you know, maintaining it. It's all going to be done on our side and anything is going to be brought up in a couple of minutes. So it's also interesting for those communities as, and the same way for startups. You know, you don't need to bring 50 people in the office or now remote work with pandemics. You can actually just in 5 minutes run 50 Shells and everybody's going to be on the same system running the same thing that you need. And we can easily customize anything to any need.
Can we then talk about the pricing? So I've already mentioned $4.99, that's dollars per shell. You get 10 hours to be used over them over a month. So that's the basic one. You get, I think, 2 gig of RAM, and it's good for Like, I tried it with MX Linux. It worked fine. You don't recommend it for Windows for obvious reasons. And if you want Windows, whatever the option you choose, you obviously have to pay extra $9 for a license. So that's the kind of basic option. What else do you guys have?
Yeah, so just like you mentioned, the $4.95 plan is really, it's like, hey, test it out. And like you mentioned, 10 hours. We have the basic plan, which comes in at $9.95, which is the same as the light plan, only it's unlimited use. So that's the difference between that one. And then you have the plus and the pro. So the plus being the 4 gigabytes of RAM, and then the pro being 8 gigabytes of RAM. And then beyond that, we also offer the ability to customize your machine. So we do have a custom plan where you can go, you can create whatever you want. I think I created a machine that had something like, 512 gigs or something? Something, you know, I bragged about it. I was like, this is my supercomputer. But, we have that option as well, too.
I was just thinking, it's only a matter of time before Linus Tech Tips does a video on, can you game on it?
yeah.
Well, can you game on it? I mean, you have Stadia these days. This is not that much. Well, it is a very different, but it's not that much different.
I see there was a Windows option. So if you have a license, could you maybe feasibly game on it?
So the key is getting GPUs. So that's one thing that we don't have today, but... Again, we had two conversations this morning, Mac OS and GPUs. So, and we purchased some GPUs actually recently. And so they're going to install those into the Tokyo data center. And we're going to start to do some testing.
Now, this is a trick question, and you have to be extremely careful what you say. NVIDIA or AMD?
We're actually starting to test with NVIDIA, but we're also going to add AMD to testing.
Yeah.
It's obviously everything is running Linux systems. So, you know, we're going to test and see what works the best.
And of course, you have to have an ultra premium shell that is for cryptocurrency mining.
Do you actually get people trying that on your shells?
We've had people ask, you know, about it. And I basically said... Like, yeah, if you want 0.0000001 Bitcoin after 5 years of mining, yes, go for it.
I've heard on previous podcast interviews that there are some latency issues, which is obviously you guys are new. It's new technology, and it's something that you're going to be addressing in future as you guys grow, as your infrastructure grows. But I see on your website that you're offering an audio production shell, which is particularly latency sensitive. That wouldn't be a use case that I would use myself, but I just was curious as I saw it. So how do you plan to address the issue in relation to latency?
Yeah. I mean, I'll admit, like, so we've kind of shied away from that. Like, you literally have to be next to a data center, have a, you know, great local connection. And, you know, it's because we don't have GPUs, obviously, it's not going to be, you know, the bestest of best experiences. So, you know, in terms of the latency, it is just like you said, we're new. We only have 6 data centers right now, right? 4 of them in the U.S. There's the one in the Europe, right, in Amsterdam, and then we have one in Tokyo. So, you know, if someone joins from Australia or from India, I mean, we let them know. You know, so some people will message us and be like, "Hey, I'm in New Zealand. Am I going to have a good experience?" And you know, I'm honest with them, like. You know, it's you're pretty far from Japan. You can give it a try. And, you know, obviously we offer a 7-day money back guarantee. So, you know, give it a try, see how it is. And if it doesn't work for you, we'll give you your money back. But, you know, it's funny, right? With the virtual desktop, there's all these different variables, right? How good is your local connection? How far are you from a data center? You know, how good is your machine? So all of these different factors, best thing to do is give it a try, you know?
I mean, regarding processing and, again, rendering, it's... I mean, for processing, you would need to go to custom shell and have a bigger one, you know, and it's just going to take time to do that part. To do the real-time audio, yes, it's going to have latency if you're not close to the data center. And there's also, you know, browsers, they add additional latency because they are heavy in networking. Our app regarding that is much lighter compared to browsers. So in that case, you know, app would be a better choice. But with GPUs, as Alex mentioned, we actually have in plan to get rid of one more layer between, you know, the image being, you know, presented to user and the image being up on the hardware. So it's going to help it in that way, you know, the entire encoding, decoding and everything, which should, again, speed up considerably everything on the few fronts.
I was just, before we go to the next section, I was just wondering, do you guys have kind of data? What is your most popular, well, I would say distribution, but what if it's Windows? Like, what do people go for the most?
So it's right now it's actually Ubuntu. So Ubuntu's number one, and then it follows by Windows, and then Manjaro, and then Linux Mint is how it is right now. So
that's pretty good. All right. Well, there is something that we kind of felt that we have to ask you. Like outside, more that kind of relates more to your company than to what you offer, or to your product, or to your to anything else. Basically, there are shells.com, a kind of your Alex, your brother is Andrew Lee, who is now a part of a big controversy over at Freenode. And that's one thing. And secondly, your and I don't have the title here, but Mark Karpeles, who works for you, CTO, yeah, your CTO, Mark Karpeles. Am I pronouncing it properly?
Yeah, Karpeles, it's perfect. Karpeles.
Yeah, thanks. He's received a suspended sentence in connection to his role at Mt. Gox, which that was a while ago. That was a big scandal about some missing bitcoins. It was a Bitcoin exchange, given that, I wanted to ask, given the above, do you have a mechanism that you have in place to protect your users' data? So, for example, obviously everybody's protected with firewalls and everything against outside, but do you, and this is going to sound really nasty, but do you have a protection against an insider job? Right? How do you protect? And you know, that's not necessarily just because who you employ, but my company where I work definitely has these protections in place. So how do you protect people's data, which is what you kind of store against you know, insider and outside problems?
In short, are you GDPR compliant?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we handle all our users' data, privacy, security. I mean, exactly like other cloud providers would, right? So you look at cloud providers like DigitalOcean and Dropbox and the processes and things that they have in place. I mean, we're definitely aligned with that. So, you know, we have strong internal, you know, policies and procedures to essentially, you know, strictly prohibit access to user shells. Obviously, there will be, you know, the rare circumstance where it might come up, right? Whether it's like a legal issue or, you know, say an actual user needs assistance, right, on their shell to address a support related situation, you know. So those would be situations where, you know, that there would be potentially some access. But again, I mean, at the end of the day, we're in line with everyone else. So
we're pretty aligned with everybody else, and we also strive to make sure that, as you asked, internally, and mentioned Mark Karpeles. Mark is first of all an extraordinary engineer, and he is misfortunate with Mt. Gox, which was he wasn't found guilty of any nefarious act. The company, of course, did fail. And he, as CEO of the company, you know, was responsible for that. But he wasn't found guilty on any charge. So that's important. Like, people remember that there was the controversy. They don't remember that he was found not guilty on those charges. And he's very, because of that actual situation, he's actually the most sensitive person in the company when it comes to privacy and security. So we have insanely strong internal mechanisms that almost nobody has access to user data. And for example, I don't have access to the back end of the user data. And nobody who doesn't need have access is not going to get an access. And all developers working on project, they are kind of contained in their own project unless they need to collaborate on other projects. So they get permission. And if it's needed, permission gets revoked. So it's a very strict permission on the GitLab that we internally use. The company policy is, for example, non-tech team, nobody has any access to any part of the code.
Yeah, no, I didn't want it also kind of come across like I don't like that I wouldn't, I don't know, employ ex-cons or anything like this, or even people who got swept into a misfortune. That's not what I wanted to say, obviously. It's actually on some level, I would say, like, fair play to you. You employed somebody who has problem with their reputation, which... Mm-hmm. Controversy is not exactly a big friend of business, so that to me it's a good thing, right? I'm not, you know. Secondly, as I said, your Alex, your brother is the boss of Freenode, we are here not to discuss Freenode. I don't feel I neither qualified, and I don't know about Shane or Connor. But I don't feel either qualified or even like it's not my thing, IRC. I know there was a problem, and if we had him on, it would be a different conversation about different things. But from your point of view, given what happened with Freenode, did you guys see it and think like, oh, okay, well, there is something that we need to start? Like, did it affect you in any way? Your attitude towards the community, your approach to maybe the open source not audience, but a community.
No, it's a good question. So, I mean, if you like just based on our discussions up to this point, you can see that we've been working very closely with the distros, right? And this is something that we've been doing even prior to the news, right? Obviously, all of these distro collaborations all started back, you know, dating back to last year in terms of working with them and getting them down. Like, you know, folks like Manjaro, we worked for 2 to 3 months to get their image right. Right. So, you know, on top of that, there's, you know, just to let you know, we were at Linux App Summit, right? I spoke at Linux App Summit. And again, that was before the Freenode incident. So I guess what I'm trying to kind of mention is it's like, you know, our approach hasn't changed per se, you know. I've always known that, hey, getting with the community, getting with this open source community, that's, you know, we saw really good use for our product and we wanted to collaborate with them to make the product better. So, you know, us being involved in that, us being involved, this week, I'm actually, me and Zlatan are speaking at the OpenSUSE conference. On Friday, we're speaking there. Next week, KDE Academy, right? We have a BOF that's planned as well too, and we're going to be speaking there. You know, so yeah,
I'm one of the highest ranking officers in the company, and I had no clue that this is going on. So it tells you enough what's the relation between Shells and Freenode. We don't have any connection with it. We just, you know, did sponsor it. Because obviously Andrew and Alex are brothers, so, you know, that was the connection relation, but we don't have any operational connection or anything with the Freenode, nor does have Freenode have any operational connection with us. And once the things went south on that side, we specifically requested to be removed from the front page because it was creating the controversy. And, you know, that's, again, I said it's going to be a boring answer to this, but we don't have, I guess people expected that we have some connection with it, but we don't. And again, it was never brought up to us, and we're not part of it. It did affect us in the sense that, yeah, people are now trying to connect us with that, but yeah, again, we're not.
I have a specific example or a specific question in relation to privacy, and I'm going to paint an example. Do you have a zero knowledge policy in relation to privacy? And let's just run with this example with me for a second. Let's say somebody's running your Windows 10 shell, and they have a torrent application, and of course they're downloading the latest Ubuntu ISO. Given that you can run Ubuntu in a separate shell, don't know why they would do this, but they're using the torrent protocol. Would that raise any flags in your system? Of course, what they're doing is perfectly legal because they're downloading an open source distribution. But let's say they decide, oh, I want to get the latest Marvel movie using this exact same method. Would anything be raised? Anything be flagged internally in the company, or do you monitor anything like that?
We have kind of like fair share policy, you know, don't abuse the networking. But other than that, we don't have any monitoring in place. So if somebody would torrenting Ubuntu image, it wouldn't raise anything. Again, we don't check shells. We don't look into the shells. Only what we would see, it would be, you know, the networking. If some shell is just using full network, you know, all week, that would, you know, come across in our monitoring. But yeah, we don't see what they're exactly doing, nor do we care.
What jurisdiction, what country's jurisdiction are you operating under? Is it the United States, or is it depending on where the data center is?
Yeah, it's depending. I mean, again, because we're in Europe, we obviously follow GDPR, but even if users outside of Europe would ask for that, we would honor. There's obviously California jurisdiction that we need to honor as well, which is quite similar, close to the GDPR itself. And Japan has its own jurisdiction that we follow closely.
And do you keep, so this is a question that you would normally ask like a VPN provider, for example, but let's say that somebody actually wants to run a VPN in one of your shells, like somebody spin up a WireGuard installation in there somewhere. So do you guys keep like network logs or anything that would identify, let's say, a journalist who's using your service to connect from a place where they are threatened or, you know, something like that?
So the answer is no. And what we like to tell about our services is basically, you know, VPN on steroids or Dropbox on steroids. So you can actually use it in that way. And for example, one of interesting usages, at least for me, from my side, when I joined the company, the 10-hour shell was actually for journalists. You know, you bring up the shell, you exchange the sensitive data and chat inside that shell, and then that shell gets, you know, basically burned down. So it's not going to be any evidence or data.
So that about wraps it up. So Alex and Zlatan, thank you so much for coming on. This is the part where we give you guys a little bit of space to give out your social medias or call attention to any upcoming cool things that are happening.
Okay. No. Thanks again for having us. Really enjoyed it. And you know, meeting you guys for the first time, it's great. And let us know if you want us back anytime soon. We'll come on. So, but you know, you can tweet us at shells.com, and then obviously visit us at shells.com. And then on top of that, like I mentioned earlier, right, we'll be speaking at the OpenSUSE conference this coming Friday, the 18th. And then we are also holding a BOF at the KD Academy, and that will be on the 23rd of June at 1600 UTC. So, you know, if you guys have questions for us, then that's another great place to talk to us.
Now, thanks, guys, for having us. Thanks for asking interesting questions. And I'm always, again, for the entire community and your listeners, anybody can pop and ask me questions on Twitter. I'm by the handle Zlatan Debian, because obviously I'm in love with Debian. yeah, I'm actually a really Debian.
Oh, wow. Just for the listeners, Zlatan's showing us his tattoo of the Debian. Is it a twister? No, I forget what it's called. It's the spiral.
The swirl. And is that an anarchist logo in the middle?
Yeah. All right. Yes. They know. They actually go very nice together. The red and black anarchist colors. And yeah, yeah. Okay.
very good. So, Alex, I understand that there is a code that our listeners can use to get
yeah,
a
yeah.
cheap
so
shell. Is that
we,
right?
We also wanted to give your listeners an opportunity to try shells out. So, you know, we'll provide a link that you just click that link and you can go and get it'll be a special deal. Just, you know, give us a try, see what it's like. Like I mentioned before, you know, 7-day money back guarantee. So, you know, don't hesitate, see what it's like and, you know, give us feedback as well too. Definitely we'll respond and all the feedback is definitely appreciated.
Mm. So that link will be in the show notes. So yeah, that about wraps it up. We have been the Linux Lads. I've been Shane and joined by Mike and Connor. Say goodbye.
Hi. Toodles.
And thanks once again to Zlatan and Alex for coming on from shells.com. Does definitely sound like a very interesting product. So I'll definitely have a look myself for sure, because it sounds very interesting. But on that note, see you later. See you in 2 weeks.